Now, it's often instructive to look at the stories recorded in the Bible to see what lessons we can draw out of them. After all, the things that are recorded in the pages of Scripture are given to us as examples. And the stories of the patriarchs in the Old Testament, I think, are particularly interesting because there's more detail. You learn more about the different people and learn, you know, some of the trials and the things they faced as they went through life. And you can better understand them as people, understanding both their shortcomings and their strengths. Today, we're going to look at one particular example in Jacob's life. I mean, Jacob was an interesting person. I think it's fair to say he led an eventful life. And I think it'd be fair to say he probably had, at least early in his life, he had more faults than his father Isaac and grandfather Abraham. In spite of this, his name was changed from Jacob to Israel, and from his immediate family, you know, the blessings that God gave to Abraham were passed to Isaac and then on to Jacob, and they were fulfilled through Jacob's family. So I think we can learn a lot from Jacob, and we are going to look at one particular event in his life today. So let's turn back to Genesis chapter 32, and we're going to read the story where Jacob wrestled with God and prevailed. Now, before we read this, as you turn to Genesis chapter 32, let me just give a little background. I'm sure most of us are familiar with the story of Jacob and his brother and the things that happened in his life. Now, Jacob and his brother Esau were fraternal twins. They were born to Rebekah and Isaac. And, of course, you know, Isaac was the son of Abraham. And during her pregnancy, Rebekah was concerned because it was like there was a struggle going on in her womb. And she inquired of God because she thought, well, something's wrong here. Something isn't right. But God said, don't worry. You know, her children, her two sons, would become two nations, and the younger would serve the elder. Now, Esau was born some minutes before Jacob. And after Jacob was born, just as an infant, out of the womb, he grabbed his brother's heel. He reached out and grabbed his brother's heel, and that's where he got the name of Jacob. Now, the name Jacob literally means heel catcher, and it has the meaning of supplanter. Now, a supplanter is someone who would take another person's place, try to take another person's place, and often that is done by scheming, deception, some type of strategy, and the like. For instance, if you were running a race with someone and you were behind and the person who was ahead of you, you might try to take a swipe at their heel. That's what you call a heel catcher, to try to trip them up so you can take their place and win the race. So this is what Jacob's name meant. It wasn't necessarily a good name, but that's what they named him. Now, even though they were twins, they were fraternal twins, but they were both quite different. Esau was a hunter, he was a man of the field, and he was Isaac's favorite, whereas Jacob was described as a mild man living in tent, and he was his mother Rebekah's favorite. Now one day Jacob took advantage of Esau's weaknesses. If you remember, Esau was hunting, he was weak, he was just starving, he was famished, and Jacob had some food prepared, and Esau ended up selling his birthright for a bowl of stew. Then later his mother prompted him to trick his father, to trick Isaac into giving Jacob the blessing that Isaac intended to give Esau. In the aftermath of that, you know, Esau was furious that Esau was the oldest, he should have had the blessing, and that's who Isaac intended to give it to him, but it was too late once it had been given to Jacob, and Esau was furious, and basically he said, as soon as my father dies, as his life is over, I'm going to kill my brother. And, Jacob knew Esau at that time probably would carry it out. And so his mother said, okay, run away, go away, go stay with my brother, Laban, back where, Rebekah had grown up. And so, Jacob fled. He went away from home. Now, during his absence and his time away, of course, you know, Jacob met his Rachel, and he loved Rachel and wanted to marry her. But of course, you remember the story. He got tricked by his soon-to-be father-in-law. So he married Leah instead after working 7 years. And he said, well, okay, you have another week. I'll let you marry Rachel too, but you're going to have to work for me for another 7 years. So he said, okay. You know, so he went through with this. And during this 14 years, he worked for his father-in-law. His father-in-law wasn't always the most honorable person. He was always, you know, trying to maybe trick him and take advantage of him and not give him the wages that were necessarily due to Jacob. Then finally, one day, God came to Jacob in a dream, and he says, well, it's time to go home. It's time to go back, return to your family. And so he packed up his family and leaves. But there's one big problem. To go from where he was living with Laban to get back to Isaac, he had to go through the territory of his brother Esau. I mean, his brother Esau had left home, and he had been prosperous himself. And he had to go across this territory. And he knew last time he saw him, he wanted to kill him. So he was afraid what was going to happen this time when he crossed his territory. So with all this background, I mean, this is really an interesting life. You can probably make a mini-series out of Jacob's life, all the things and the trouble and turmoil he had with his family. So let's pick up the story in Genesis chapter 32 and verse 22. So at this point, they were on their way back home. Jacob had sent messengers to Esau saying, I'm coming through your territory. And Esau sent servants came back and said, well, Esau's coming to meet you with 400 men. And so, Jacob didn't have 400 men. I can't survive against all these people. So it was a scary time, a concerning time for him. And so they were camped at night. So they had stopped for the night, and in the middle of the night, Jacob decided, I don't want to stay here. I want to get up, and I want to move my family and my livestock across this brook. And for whatever reason, he did this in the middle of the night. And we'll start reading Genesis 32 and verse 22, where it says, he rose that night and took his two wives, his two female servants, and his 11 sons, and crossed over the ford of Jabbok. He took them, sent them over the brook, and sent over what he had. Then Jacob was left alone. So he had sent all his family over this brook, and he was left alone. And it says, a man wrestled with him until the breaking of day. You notice the M in man is capitalized, as we'll understand later. This is the pre-incarnate Jesus Christ, the God of the Old Testament. So God wrestled with him until the breaking of day. And now when he saw that he did not prevail against him, he touched the socket of his hip, and the socket of Jacob's hip was out of joint as he wrestled with him. And he said, let me go, for the day breaks. But he said, Jacob said, I won't let you go unless you bless me. And so he said to him, what is your name? And he said, well, it's Jacob. And God said, your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have struggled with God and with men and have prevailed. And then Jacob asked, saying, tell me your name, I pray. And he said, why is it that you ask me about my name? And he blessed him there. And so Jacob called the name of the place Peniel. That means you can see God's face, for I have seen God face to face, and my life is preserved. Now, this is a interesting example. It's unique in all of Scripture. I mean, no one else is recorded as ever wrestling with God. In this episode is cited as a positive example for the people of Israel that Jacob's, people of Israel who were Jacob's descendants should look to and to follow this example. If you turn back to Hosea chapter 12. Now, the book of Hosea describes how Israel had been unfaithful to God. They had committed spiritual adultery, and they had brought punishment upon themselves, and they were suffering because of that. Now, in spite of this, God still loved Israel. I mean, they still, God cared for Israel, even because of their sin, and he wanted them to repent and return to them. And in the example of Jacob wrestling with God is used to describe how people should turn back to God. So let's start reading in verse 1 of Hosea chapter 12. Again, Hosea chapter 12 and verse 1, where it says, Ephraim feeds the wind. Ephraim was one of Joseph's sons, who of course was one of the sons of Jacob. This is meant to describe Israel. Ephraim feeds on the wind and pursues the east wind. He daily increases lies and desolation. Also, they make a covenant with the Assyrians, and oil is carried to Egypt. So at this time, Israel was really a corrupt society. As it says here, they're described as daily increasing in lies and desolation. God had removed his blessings from them at this time, and he had removed their protection. And as it says here, they make a covenant with the Assyrians, and oil is carried to Egypt. So they try to get safety and prosperity by trading with these really ancient enemies of Israel. They tried to make friends with them. But as it said, they were feeding on the wind and pursuing the east wind. So this is meant to illustrate there is nothing solid about this. This was transitory with no real foundation to rely upon. Continue in verse 2, the Lord also brings a charge against Judah and will punish Jacob according to his ways, according to his deeds, he will recompense them. So at this time, Judah wasn't quite as corrupt as Israel yet, but they too were suffering because of their sins. But both Jacob and Israel, you know, they were suffering from the curses they had brought upon themselves. Then we continue in verse 3, we'll read what the descendants of Jacob's, God is advising them, this is what you should do. And he says, well, you should look to your example of your namesake, Jacob, Israel, in verse 3, where it says, he took his brother by the heel in the womb, and in his strength he struggled with God. So again, this confirms that the man talked about in Genesis, this is God, the pre-incarnate Jesus, the one who became Jesus Christ. Verse 4, yes, he struggled with the angel and prevailed. He wept, and he sought favor from him. He found him in Bethel, and there he spoke to us, that is, the Lord of hosts. The Lord is his memorable name. So you also, by the help of your God, return. Observe mercy and justice, and wait on your God continually. So again, in verse 6, they're saying, so you, the same thing, just like Jacob, returned home and returned to God. He said, you too, by the help of your God, return. Because Jacob, in his strength, he struggled with God, and not only did he struggle, he prevailed. He got God's blessing. As it says in verse 4, too, he says he wept and sought favor from him. So he really sought God. He sought his help, and he knew that he needed God's help if they needed to survive. And just as Jacob returned from his exile back to the land of promise, God here is imploring Israel to return to him and to obey him so that they too could once again enjoy the blessings that God would have for them if they would only obey him and do what he said. So with this in mind, so this event was given as an example for Israel later to look back to follow. So today we're going to examine this event in some detail just to see what else can we pull from this example of Jacob wrestling with God. Because I think as we read through this, there really are, several important lessons we can learn from that. So let's go back to that evening. If you just think about it, Jacob's on his journey home. He's been away, at least 14 years. He's been away. He has two wives and their handmaids. They have 11 children at that time, not 10. So, he has 11 children under 14 in the wilderness going back. They have a lot of hundreds of head of livestock that Jacob had earned really as part of his wages. He had been prosperous in his time away with Laban. But he knows at this time Esau is coming to meet him with 400 men, and he's worried that Esau is seeking revenge. He's going to get even with me for deceiving, their father those many years before and taking the blessing that Isaac wanted to give Esau instead of Jacob. And so they had camped for the evening beside a brook. We read about that, how they stopped by a brook. Then for whatever reason, he got his family up in the middle of the night, said, okay, we're not going to stay here. We're going to go on the other side of this brook. It really doesn't say why. Maybe he wanted that as a barrier. He wanted that barrier out of the way. So if Esau came, that would not be in their way in the morning. And then after moving everyone over the brook, Jacob crossed back over the brook, and he was alone. So he was all by himself. You can just try to picture this, in the wilderness, the desert, maybe some trees, rocks, what have you. So he was alone in the darkness of the night. I mean, some commentaries speculate that he went back across to have some time alone. Maybe he could pray because he was worried that Esau was coming. So he wanted to pray to God about it. And then in the dark of the night, Jacob is confronted by a man who grabs him and wrestles with him, and apparently for hours, because this starts in the middle of the night and goes until daybreak. It's not just a pushing or shoving match, but this is a grab each other and roll around on the ground type of wrestling match. It's interesting that the Hebrew word for wrestle means dust. It comes from the word dusty, because you're rolling around in the dust and the dirt. And that's kind of describes what's going on here between God and Jacob at this time. So this is what Jacob was doing in the middle of the night, and it goes on, and apparently no one can get the upper hand. Then at some point, Jacob realizes he's wrestling with God. And the match continues, and as the sky begins to lighten, the man, you know, the God of the Old Testament, sees that Jacob isn't going to let go. He's not going to stop wrestling. And he touches Jacob's hip, and he apparently dislocates his hip. And this, of course, causes a great deal of pain. And Jacob still won't let go. And the man tells Jacob, "Let me go. The sun's about to rise." So for whatever reason, you know, God wanted this wrestling match to be over. The sun was coming up. And Jacob said, "I'm not going to let you go unless you bless me first." As it says, you know, Hosea, we read in Hosea, says that Jacob wept and sought his favor. And he wept because he wanted that blessing so badly, and he wasn't going to let go. And he could have been weeping too, because he was in great pain. His hip was dislocated. It's never happened to me, but I understand that it can be very, very painful, and especially you're wrestling with someone with a dislocated hip. But, you know, as a result of this, God does bless Jacob, and he does change his name from Jacob to Israel at that time. So what are some lessons that we can extract from this unique account? Now, this brief account doesn't say exactly when Jacob realized who this person was that he was wrestling with. And it would seem to be that he didn't understand that at first, because it wasn't nearly till daybreak when he could start, there was enough light, maybe he could see who it was. And he didn't ask for a blessing right away. He didn't really realize who this was until later. But anyway, at some point, you know, Jacob finally realized who he was wrestling. You know, I'm sure it was a shocking event, because before this time, Jacob had dreams. He had prophetic dreams where God told him that he would receive great blessings. So maybe he recognized him from these dreams. But somehow, you know, this realization came to him that he was wrestling with God. And that changed everything about his perspective of what was going on and why it was going on. That originally he didn't know who he was wrestling with, and then he did know, and he says, "I want a blessing from you." So I think from this experience, you know, we can think, you know, we each have, you know, things we wrestle with in this life. But do you always realize just who it is you are wrestling with? If you have trials and difficulties and things aren't going your way and you're struggling, trying to do the right thing, well, just who is it that you're wrestling with? Are you wrestling with the world, wrestling with yourself, or are you wrestling with God? And we need to carefully consider just who it is we are wrestling with, so we always react properly and in a godly manner. So let's turn to Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 3, as I think this, again, this is the point that we don't always, we may be wrestling with something and we may not really realize, well, it's really God who is wrestling with me, maybe trying to show me something, help me learn something, and become a better person. Start reading verse 3 of Hebrews 12. "For consider him, Jesus Christ, who endured such hostility from sinners against himself, lest you become weary and discouraged in your souls. For you have not yet resisted to bloodshed, striving against sin." So he's saying, you know, don't give up. You know, don't become weary. You know, whatever you're wrestling with, don't become weary or discouraged. "For you haven't yet resisted to bloodshed. For have you forgotten the exhortation which speaks to you as sons, where it says, 'My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor be discouraged when you are rebuked by him. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens, and he scourges every son whom he receives.'" So when we are chastened, when God corrects us, you know, do we always realize, at least at the beginning, what's going on? Is this God working with us, or what's going on? Is this happening for good, for no good reason, or is God working out something in my life? Because we need to keep God's purpose, you know, God's purposes and our purposes should be aligned, but they're not always completely aligned. And at times things happen to us so that the direction in our lives will more closely align with what God has in mind for us. Continue in verse 7. It says, if you endure chastening, God deals with you as with sons. For what son is there whom a father does not chasten? But if you without chastening, which of all have become partakers, if you are without chastening, then you are illegitimate and not sons. Furthermore, we have had human fathers who corrected us, and we paid them respect. Shall we not much more readily be in subjection to the Father as spirits and live? For they and they for a few days chastened us and seemed best to them, and he for our profit, that we may be partakers of his holiness. Now no chastening seems to be joyful for the present, but painful. Nevertheless, afterwards it yields a peaceable fruit of righteousness in those who have been trained by it. So just that chastening may not be enjoyable, just like Jacob when he was wrestling, his hips is out of joint, and that was certainly caused a lot of pain. That was not enjoyable, yet at the end, he received a blessing. Just as here, even though chastening is difficult for a while, maybe painful, it yields a peaceable fruit of righteousness by those who have been trained by it. Now, of course, we also wrestle against other opponents as well. If you go back to Ephesians chapter 6, again, it's important. Just who are you wrestling against? We can be wrestling against God. In Ephesians chapter 6, starting in verse 10, here it lists several other things that we can wrestle against as well. Where it says, finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood. So this same type of wrestling, this is usually described how we wrestle with the devil. But as it describes here, against principalities, against powers, against rulers of darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. Therefore, take up the whole armor of God that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. You know, these are all very deadly opponents. These are opponents that we do not want to take on our own. But we can and will prevail as long as we stay close to God. As it says here, take up the whole armor of God. We need to stay close to God. We don't wrestle these spiritual forces against us by our own might, but rather with the might and strength of God. Now there's another opponent too that we wrestle against, and in many respects this opponent is the most difficult to prevail against, and that opponent is ourselves, you know, our own carnal human nature. We turn back to James chapter 1 and verse 12. Let's read what it says about this, because that there may be times when we think we're wrestling against God, that we think, well, maybe, you know, God isn't being fair, or he's putting you in a difficult situation that you just can't stand. But what may really be happening is that we're really wrestling against our own carnal human nature. We'll start reading here in James chapter 1 and verse 12, where it said, blessed is the man who endures temptation, for when he has been approved, he will receive the crown of life, which the Lord has promised those who love him. In verse 13, it says, let no one say when he is tempted, I am tempted by God. So another way to maybe say this is, let no one say when he is wrestling against temptation, trying to get away from temptation, that I am tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he himself tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires and enticed. So when you think about this temptation, we have our own desires, a carnal human nature, which is not dead in us yet, that we wrestle against. Those are the things that we need to wrestle against. Because it says, when that desire, if it's unchecked, if it's not conquered, verse 15, it says, then when desire is conceived, it gives birth to sin, and sin, when it is full grown, gives birth to death. You know, we can be our own most dangerous foe, because we can attack ourselves by deceiving ourselves, thinking, We can try to justify sinful actions. We can make excuses for ourselves. We can excuse bad behavior, or simply give up and seek to persevere, giving up on self-control, or maybe giving in to selfishness or pride. I mean, our carnal self can be a dangerous enemy. It wrestles. I mean, elsewhere it talks about there's two natures. I mean, we have God's nature in us, the new man and the old man, and we need to prevail against the old man. So from this, I hope we can see, just how important it is to understand and to realize just who it is that you wrestle against. I mean, sometimes, just like Jacob is wrestling in the dark, we can be wrestling and struggling and maybe not really understand what's going on. And we need to turn to God for clarity and help and his strength to overcome completely. I think an example that comes to mind is Job. I think we're all familiar with the story of Job. So, I mean, who really brought calamity on Job's house? I mean, the devil went to God, and the devil is the one that instigated all the trouble that came upon Job. But who did Job blame? I mean, Job blamed God for why these things happened. And Job's friends came and said, well, Job, you must have done something really wrong to deserve all these things you brought upon yourself. And it was only at the end of all these trials, and then when God revealed himself, that Job finally saw who is this I'm really struggling against. And then he finally saw with clarity really what was going on. So anyway, this is one lesson to learn from. Just who are you wrestling with in this life? Another point to draw from Jacob's wrestling match, and that is when you wrestle with God, do you wrestle to get away from God, or do you wrestle to hold on to God? We kind of mentioned this earlier, that Jacob probably didn't know exactly who he was wrestling with. I mean, it was dark, it was night, he was probably scared, angry, surprised, and he didn't know what was going on in the middle of the night because there was no one to help him. So I think probably at first he was probably wrestling to get away from this person who had set upon him. But then he finally realized who he was wrestling as the day broke, and then he was no longer wrestling to get away from God, but rather he was wrestling to hold on to God. He was not going to let go. So likewise, when trials and other difficulties come our way, we need to wrestle to hold on to God, rather than to wrestle to get away from God. And we need to wrestle to hold on to God with the same type of determination that he had. I mean, hanging on to God and holding on to him with all our might is the only way that we can prevail, that we are sure to prevail in this life. And as described by Jacob, even his hip was dislocated, rolling around on the ground, wrestling, and that was extremely painful, but he would not, in spite of that pain and suffering, he was not about to let go of God until he received his blessing. Let's turn to James chapter 4. It talks here some about the struggles that we face, and sometimes we wrestle the wrong things in the wrong way. James chapter 4, I'll start reading in verse 1. Where it says, where do wars and fights come among you? When you think about fights, we'll use this analogy of wrestling matches. Where are these struggles that you are suffering? Where do they come from? Don't they come from your desires for pleasure that war in your members? You lust and do not have. You murder and covet and cannot obtain. You fight in war, yet you do not have because you do not ask. You ask and you do not receive because you ask amiss that you may spend it on your pleasures. Adulterers and adulteresses, don't you know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? Whoever therefore wants to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. Or do you think the scripture says in vain, the spirit who dwells in us yearns jealously? So here, these are people that are struggling with the world, and really they're struggling to get away from God and struggling to get their own way and take advantage of their fellow men. But what they should do in verse 7, submit to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. Lament and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning and your joy to gloom. Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and he will lift you up. So when you wrestle with God, I mean, the only way to prevail, again, is to hold on and never, never let go. So it says, draw near to God and he will draw near to you. And think about that. Think about how Jacob, he not only draw near to God, he grabbed hold of him and he would not let go, no matter what. So that's, when you think we need to draw near to God and hold on to him, keep that picture in your mind. Now, one good way we can wrestle with God, and the best way we can prevail with God, is to wrestle in prayer. I mean, this analogy is used in Scripture. I mean, Jacob was able to talk to God directly and to seek a blessing directly from God while he wrestled with him. In a similar manner, we can talk directly to God in prayer, and we can even wrestle with him in prayer and ask for his blessings in our lives and other people's lives. If you turn back to Hebrews chapter 5 and verse 7. Hebrews chapter 5 and verse 7, here the prayers of Jesus Christ are described. And I think it's good to remember that we should look to the example of wrestling with God in prayer when we're imploring God for his help in whatever struggles we face. So I'll start reading verse 7 of Hebrews chapter 5, where it says, this is describing Jesus Christ, in the days of his flesh, when he had offered up prayers and supplications and with vehement cries and tears to him who was able to save him from death and was heard because of his godly fear. And this describes the intensity with which Jesus Christ prayed to his Father. The New Living Translation says that he offered prayers and pleadings with loud cries and tears. So this again describes just how we need to come to God when we seek his help. Now Paul too describes how he wrestled with God in prayer. If you turn back to Hebrews chapter 15. I mean, Paul went through difficult times. He wrestled with the world, so to speak. He endured a lot of trials as he traveled to preach the gospel. See, Romans chapter 15 and verse 30. Romans 15, verse 30, where Paul writes, it says, "Now I beg you, brethren, through the Lord Jesus Christ and through the love of the Spirit, that you strive together with me in prayers to God for me." And Paul really needed God's help and his protection and his encouragement as he went through his travels. And the Amplified Bible translates this verse this way. It says, "I appeal to you, brethren, for the sake of our Lord Jesus Christ and by the love given by the Spirit, to unite with me in earnest wrestling in prayer to God on my behalf." So this, again, is described, Paul is asking them to wrestle with God for me in prayer, to really go to God with supplications, because I need his help as I go through to preach the gospel in places that oppose me greatly. And the same thought, if you turn to Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 18, this same type of prayer is described, and how we, in the type of prayer we should give to our fellow brothers and sisters in Christ when they are in need. In Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 18, again, this describes the type of prayers we should have for one another, where it says, "Praying always with all prayer and supplication in the Spirit, being watchful to this end with all perseverance and supplication for the saints." Again, with all perseverance and supplication for the saints. We know the saints are those that are called out of this world. They are fellow members in the church. And so this same type of earnestness, again, wrestling with God, is the way we should come before him and seek his help in time of need. Now, when talking about these types of prayers we should pray, I think we'll look back at two different types of prayers that Jacob gave. Start turning back to Genesis chapter 28. There's one prayer that Jacob gave as he is fleeing to go to his uncle Laban's home. And there was another prayer later. This was just before his wrestling match. as he is returning home, and he's afraid that Esau was coming to see him. Let's start reading verse 13 of Genesis 28. And this is a dream that Jacob had. You know, Jacob saw a ladder going to heaven, and in this dream, God conveyed, he said, you're going to inherit the blessings of Abraham and Isaac. So I read in verse 13 of Genesis 28, it says, and behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie I will give to you and your descendants. Also your descendants shall be as the dust of the earth and shall spread across the west and the east and to the north and to the south. And in you and your seed and all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I have spoken to you. So these are these tremendous blessings that God was conferred to Jacob and his descendants. In verse 16, then Jacob woke from his sleep and said, surely the Lord's in this place, and I didn't know it. And he was afraid and said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. In verse 18, Jacob rose early in the morning and took the stone on which he has set his head and set up a pillar. And he poured oil on top of the stone. And he called this place Bethel, but the name of the city had been Luz previously. And Jacob made a vow, and this is what I want to concentrate on, where he starts out, says, if God be with me, and if he keeps me in the way that I'm going, and if he gives me bread to eat and clothing to put on so that I come back to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God. In this stone which I have set as a pillar shall be God's house, and all that you give me I will surely give a tenth to you. So this is kind of amazing. God says, I'm going to give you these great blessings. And Jacob is basically saying, well, if you make good on this promise, then you'll be my God. You know, it was really amazing. They said, well, if you do this for me, then you will be my God. And if you give me all this material blessings, then I will tithe to you. So it really seems kind of presumptuous, but this is how Jacob was at this time. But then if we turn to Genesis chapter 32, so remember this first prayer, this first conversation. Genesis chapter 32 and verse 9, this is a prayer that Jacob offered up when he knew Esau was coming. Again, Jacob 32 and verse 9 says, then Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham and the God of my father Isaac, the Lord said to me, return to your country and to your family, and I will deal well with you. In verse 10, Jacob says, I am not worthy of the least of the mercies of all the truth which you have shown to your servant. For I crossed over this Jordan with my staff, and now I have become two companies. Deliver me, I pray, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he come and attack me and the mother with the children. For you said, I will surely treat you well and make your descendants as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. So basically saying, you know, 14 years ago I left, I had a walking stick in my hand, and that is it. Now I'm a great company. I have, you know, wives and my children and a lot of livestock and material blessings. And he says, I'm not worthy of these things. I've been blessed with all these things, but I am not worthy of these mercies you have given me. And then he asked God to please remember your promises. You gave me these promises. I'm going to rely on them. Please make them come true. So this, again, is a kind of a stark comparison of the types of prayers that Jacob offered. You can see what happened earlier and then what happened later when he had certainly matured further. And this leads to our next point, and that says, when we wrestle, we read about things that we should be wrestling against. When we wrestle, how should we wrestle? And that we should wrestle to win. We wrestle to win, you know, never give in, and hold on to God no matter what. For all, wrestling is a sport of physical endurance. It's a full contact sport. And what's the purpose of wrestling? I mean, the purpose of wrestling is to get your opponent to submit. You try to get control of your opponent and get them in a position where they're basically helpless and can't free themselves and get them to submit. You try to wear each other down to take advantage of weaknesses. and you, you know, to beat your opponent. And you can't let up for a minute. If you're ever wrestling and you just take a breather, then your opponent can come in and get control of you. Throughout the scriptures, you know, he talks about things before that we struggle against in this life. I mean, if we're wrestling against sin or temptation, we must never give in. If we wrestle against the devil, we must resist him so he flees. If we're wrestling against the world and the things of the world, we need to hold on to God with all our might. If you turn back to Hebrews chapter 10, this point is brought out because wrestling can be draining. It is tiring to struggle against something. But again, you must never give in, and again, hold on to God no matter what. Let's start reading Hebrews 10 and verse 32. Hebrews 10 and verse 32, it says, "Recall the former days in which, after you were illuminated, you endured a great struggle with sufferings, partly because you were made a spectacle both by reproaches and tribulations, and partly while you became companies to those who were so treated. For you had compassion on me and my chains, and you joyfully accepted the plundering of your goods, knowing that you have a better and an enduring possession for yourselves in heaven. Therefore, do not cast away your confidence." You need to know that you can win. So don't cast away your confidence, which has great rewards. "For you have need of endurance, so that after you have done the will of God, that you may receive the promise." It says, "And then yet for a little while, he who is coming will come and will not tarry, and the just shall live by faith. But if anyone draws back, my soul has no pleasure in him." Again, if anyone draws back, God has no pleasure in the person who fades and draws back. But in verse 39, it says, "But we are not like that. We are not of those who draw back to perdition, but we are those who believe in the saving of the soul. Nonetheless, we keep going to the end. We know that we will prevail by holding on to God no matter what." Because we know the scriptures talk about that we will struggle in this life. We will endure hardship. But again, we need to keep the focus on the goal and remain confident that we can and will win no matter what struggles we might face. And we need to rely on God's promises. He has great promises for us, and we need to know that those promises are certainly worth anything that we need to endure in this life. Let's see here. Another lesson we can learn about Jacob's wrestling match, and that is that we should desire God's blessings, that we should know how important and how valuable God's blessings are. Because say what you want to about Jacob, but he did understand the value of God's blessings. I mean, he didn't always achieve them the right way, but he did. He took advantage of his brother, to get the birthright. Then he tricked his father to get the blessings because he wanted those things because he knew how valuable they were. Not that he should have done those things. And then during this night of wrestling, he would not let go of God. No matter the pain, no matter how hard it was, he would not let go of God until he received his blessings. He knew Esau was coming. He knew that Esau might want to kill him, but he would not let go of God because he wanted God's blessing. That just shows how much value he placed on it. And of course, compare that to Esau. We won't take the time to turn there, but in Hebrews 12:16. I mean, Esau is described as a person who disregarded his blessing, and he is really condemned by God that he threw away this blessing because he did not value it. Now, I'm sure we all want God's blessings. I mean, anyone in here, I wouldn't say it. I've been blessed enough, God. I don't need any more. I don't think those words would ever come out of anyone's mouth. We do want God's blessings. But do you really want God's blessings as much as you should? Do you value the blessings of God as much as you should? Do you really value the blessings even in this life and the blessings that will come when God's kingdom comes as much as you should? Because I think the way to answer this is just to consider You know, how hard do you do the things in this life that you should do that do bring blessings? I mean, God sets, you know, two ways before us, the ways of life, the ways of death, the way that brings blessings and the way that brings cursings. So how much energy and devotion and commitment do you put into doing what is right, to do those things that do bring blessings? I mean, do you really value the blessings of God? If you turn back to Hebrews, or excuse me, 1 Peter. 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 8. We can probably read about this point in a lot of places. But again, there's things God expects of us if we want his blessings. And we should, as much as Jacob wanted God's blessings, we should want it just as much. So start reading, see, 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 8. Again, 1 Peter 3 and verse 8, where it says, "Finally, all of you be of one mind, having compassion for one another, love as brothers, be tenderhearted, be courteous, don't return evil for evil or revile for reviling, but on the contrary, blessing, knowing that you were called to this, that you may inherit a blessing." So he's saying, this is the way you should act. You should remember that you are going to inherit a blessing, and this is the way you are expected to act. Continuing in verse 10, it says, "For he who would love life and see good days," if you want a good life, if you want a blessed life, "let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking deceit. Let him turn away from evil and do good. Let him seek peace and pursue it. For the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are open to their prayers. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. And who is he who will harm you if you become followers of what is good? But even if you should suffer for righteousness' sake, you are blessed. And do not be afraid of their threats, nor be troubled." So again, there's a lot of points here that, you know, these are the things that God expects from us. As it says, the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are open to their prayers. So again, wrestling with God in prayer, the type of prayer we have, and by doing right, by seeking a righteous life, God will hear our prayers, and we will be in his sight and receive his blessings. Now, one other point we'll bring out. Let's go back. If you remember, we went through this wrestling match, and Jacob asks God for a blessing. And what does God do? Does God say, "Okay, I'll bless you"? Instead, you know, Jacob asked for a blessing, then God says, "What's your name?" You say, "Well, you know, what, you know, how does that follow?" I mean, you know, God knew who this was. He knew it was Jacob, so why? But instead he asked, "Well, what is your name?" And Jacob knew, "Well, my name is Jacob. My name means heel catcher and supplanter." And he probably says this, probably all the events of his life come to mind, and the things that he knows he's done wrong, the deception that he has, you know, put into place to get his blessings. But then God says, "Your name shall no longer be called Jacob. It won't be called supplanter anymore, but your name shall be Israel, for you have struggled with God and with men and have prevailed." Now, the name Israel means prevailer with God. I mean, again, prevailing with God, that you struggled and fought and you held on to God and turned to him. I think we can agree that's a lot better name than supplanter or heel catcher. And we think about this when God asks, "What's your name?" If we think back several years earlier when Jacob sought to deceive his father. Now, if his mother, you remember his mother put animal skins on him because his brother Esau was hairy. And he went into his father Isaac. And Isaac, at this time, he was essentially blind. He couldn't tell who it was. And his father asked, "Who are you?" And Jacob said, I'm Esau. I'm your firstborn Esau." He lied who he was. And Jacob talked to him, and he's still about, you know, you feel like your brother Esau, but you don't sound like him. And his father asked him, "Are you really Esau?" And he said, lied again. He said, "Yes, I am." But here God is asking the same question, you know, who are you? And he told the truth. Of course, I'm Jacob. I am who I am. And they said, well, no, not now. You're going to be called Israel instead. So I think this can be a very revealing question to ask yourself. You know, when you say, what's your name? I mean, who are you? Who are you really? Do you pretend to be someone you're not for some benefit? I mean, Jacob, when he fooled his father, he was pretending to be someone who he wasn't. When you think, who are you still the old man? Are you still the old man who was, you know, before conversion? Or are you the new man now that you should be becoming after conversion? Just who are you? Because that can have a tremendous influence, how you act and how you behave. Sometimes you hear about people say, well, I'm not that kind of person. When someone talks, this person did that or that person did that, said, I'm not that kind of person, because that's not who you are. So if God, you know, God asks you, just who are you, how do you answer? Because people will often live up or down to the expectations that other people have for them. You know, I know there's been many studies about children in school, and they have a teacher. They would take what were considered average or even below average students, and they would tell this teacher that these are gifted students, these are above average students. And lo and behold, the children achieve more than they did before because the teacher had higher expectations of them. I mean, people will live up and down to the expectations that others have for them. My wife tells a story about a little boy. She's a teacher, and she's been substitute teaching now for several years at a local elementary school. A lot of times there's different children that she has the well-behaved children and the ones that misbehave more than others. In one classroom she was substituting in, there was a little rambunctious boy. He was kind of lovable in his own way, but he was always getting into trouble. You know, there's always something, misbehaving, not listening, talking when he should have. But one week she had mercy on him. She made them the line leader. And the line leader is the one that would lead him to lunch or to activities. And this was an important position of responsibility, that you were a line leader in school. And once she made him the line leader, this changed his whole demeanor. I mean, he walked straight and tall and orderly. He was, you know, this was an important position of responsibility, and no more did he, you know, not listen to directions or go off and get and misbehave when he was in this position, because he had different expectations for himself because he had been given this responsibility. So I think this is something too, when we consider just who are you, that, you know, adults can often react the same way. And it's what the expectations we have for ourselves as well. Now, if you turn to Colossians chapter 3 and verse 1, we'll read about the type of person that we should be, the type of person that we should not be anymore, and then the type of person we should be becoming when we think just who are you. See, Colossians chapter 3, starting in verse 1, says, if you then were raised with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ is sitting at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things above and not the things on this earth. We set our things on the minds of God. For you died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. That old man died at baptism. That old man should be buried. And your life is hidden with Christ in God. For when Christ, who is our life, appears, then you also will appear with him in glory. And we are children of God, and we have a great inheritance waiting for us. In verse 5, therefore, put to death your members which are on the earth: fornication, uncleanness, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry. Because of these things, the wrath of God is coming upon the sons of disobedience, in which you yourself once walked when you lived in them. So the world is called sons of disobedience, whereas we should be sons and daughters of obedience. Verse 8, but now you yourself are to put off all of these. This isn't the type of person you are anymore. You shouldn't have anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy language out of your mouth. Don't lie to one another, since you have put off the old man and his deeds, and have put on the new man, who is renewed in knowledge according to the image of him who created him. Where there is neither Greek nor Jew, circumcised nor uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave or free, but Christ is in all and in all. So we should be putting on the new man. That's who you are. In verse 12, therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, and that's who we are now, the elect of God, holy and beloved, this is how we should be. Put on tender mercies, kindness, humility, meekness, long-suffering, bearing with one another, and forgiving one another. If anyone has a complaint against another, even as Christ forgave you, so you also must do. But above all these things, put on love, which is the bond of perfection. And let the peace of God rule in your hearts, to which you were also called in one body, and be thankful. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with grace in your hearts to the Lord. And whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. So again, this does a great job of describing this is the way you were, and this is the way you should be. These are the expectations of the elect of God. If someone asks who you are, this will hopefully describe all of us and what we are striving to come. Well, let's give a few more scriptures to write down. We won't take the time to turn there. Again, this describes what we should be. In 1 Peter 2:9, it says, we are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, I mean, God's own special people. Those, again, that's what we are. That's what we should be. Also write down 1 Thessalonians 5:5, where it says, you are sons of light and sons of day. We are not of the night nor of darkness. So again, that describes the type of person that we are sons of light and light in the day. We are not of the night nor of darkness. And in Ephesians 2:19, we aren't strangers or foreigners, but we are fellow citizens with the saints and members of the household of God. Again, fellow citizens with the saints and the members of the household of God. These are, these are all, again, things we should striving for, that this is who we are. This is what we are striving to become, and to become part of our character. So I think there is a lot we can learn from Jacob in his wrestling match with God. So we need to remember just who it is that we are wrestling with, and to become aware just who it is we are wrestling with. Are we wrestling with God? Are we wrestling with ourselves or this world or against the devil? We need to wrestle with God in prayer. We need to wrestle to win and wrestle to obtain the blessings of God. And if we wrestle in this way, to hold on to God and to never let go, we will prevail against the world. We will prevail against the principalities and powers that are against us. We can prevail against our own carnal human nature. We can prevail against that old man, which is hopefully getting weaker and weaker and will die someday. And we can prevail with God, meaning we wrestle with him, we hold on to him until the end, when we will finally receive all the blessings that he has for us.